This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Wednesday. Matt, Brett, Erin May Quaid is going to join us. I don't know if you saw, she is running for Senate. And for a seat that's currently held by a DFLer, we will open this up. If he does decide to run, he hasn't announced yet, Clausen, we'll allow him, obviously, equal time. You know, we're going to have her on the air, though, to talk about her decision to get back into the St. Paul Capitol. That will be in the 5 o'clock hour. An odd duck of a man, Jeff McGillicuddy-Stein, joining us here in about a half an hour. Brett, how are you, my friend?
All right. How about you?
A little stressed. So if you have a high school child, there comes a discussion that you have to have about driving to high school, all right? And my son, of course, Charlie, and when I say, I'm not joking, when I talk about those ads, those radio ads for Rudy Luther Toyota and the Toyota Sienna, I love the fact that they are driving a Sienna, because a Sienna is basically almost a tank of a car. It really is a safe vehicle. So you can get dinged in a parking lot and you're going to be just fine. Charlie, I think when he started driving in his junior year to high school, I think it took 4 days. Some guy had decided to pull out. And clearly what happened is his car had hit the side and he kept pulling out. And so there was just a little dent that ran all the way down the one side of the car. Thank you very much. Didn't leave a note or anything. Just took off because it's a kid. There is another time it got hit in the parking lot. I mean, if you allow a child to drive a car to a high school parking lot, you are going to at least have at least one hit per 2 years. I would say maybe every year and a half, you're going to get the car is going to get hit. So, Brett, my wife and I are in this interesting zone. We're going to get a new car here before too long for my wife. I love the Sienna still. I'm driving a Sienna. I love my Sienna. We're probably going to get her a Prius, Toyota Prius from Rudy Luther Toyota. She's also looking at the hybrid RAV4, which is a very nice vehicle. We're kind of kicking around. We don't want to necessarily buy it this year. I don't know if you know or not, we've had just a touch smidge of medical bills this year. A few hospital stays, that'll kind of ramp up the old costs. You get to those premiums pretty quick. Anywho, so we were thinking about this next year. So we want the current car to last, but we're coming up against these interesting things where they're just basically the car, it's the old Sienna. I've had it for years. It still is a magnificent vehicle. It really is. I'm shocked at how good it is at 180,000 miles. I mean, it really is. But stuff is just, you know, it's going out on it. I just had to yesterday replace the starter on the vehicle. And it was the original starter. It went for 16 years and 180,000 miles. What else do you want from the piece of machinery? Tell me another thing in a car today that is that reliable. Thank you, Toyota. You guys make a good vehicle. We had 2 months ago an $1,100 brake job that had to be done because the brakes were just shot because apparently my daughter has two modes of stop, you know, slight tapping or sweet Jesus, I'm going to hit that moose. And so it has a tendency of grinding down the brakes. And well, we had to get those fixed. But we're kind of like at this point, it's like, okay, how many more of these do we want to do? Because, you know, let's face it. I mean, every time we have to pay for something like this, it's basically a car payment. So the day after we get the thing back after the starter, car sitting in the high school parking lot. Someone tagged it. Well, first of all, I was confused because like it was tagged up in the front quarter panel, the front driver's side quarter panel. It's tagged up there. And it's like, how did they hit that? Oh, you were parked in backwards. Because I mean, I was like, now that's an accident. You know, it's like, how is there people not like, you know, medics and ambulances and air vacs going on if it got hit up there? But it was, you know, so you know as well as I do what happened. Some kid not paying attention, looking at their phone, goofing off. Their car moved the lane and they hit my car. My car. So it's kind of the evaluation. Does it still run? I mean, I'm not looking for cosmetics. Is everything still working on it? Seems to be. It's got a big dent on it, but hey, I've got a lot of big dent on it, and I'm still sexy as hell, man. So I don't know. It's that paradigm you get in as a parent with a car. And when do you say, okay, let's kill it? You know, because I am of that mindset. I drive a vehicle till it's dead. We had a Mazda Protege that we drove for years. That, you know, it's the when we went to trade it in, they're like, we got some donuts I could give you for that. It's like it was that bad. But that's the kind of mentality we have with them. Oh, gosh, that was the car. Remember, I don't know if you were here when I was doing the fantasy football draft. And I drove to the fantasy football draft and I had plumes of smoke pouring out of the front of the engine. And I'm like, oh, yeah, now it's dead. I mean, this is I'm sending up smoke signals. This thing is done. It just had frozen up, and we just bypassed the air conditioner. It worked just fine for another 3 years. It's kind of that kind of mentality. Where would you be, you know, I guess the question is how many big, it comes down to the expenses. It comes down to the repairs. How many more do you really think you should do? I mean, it's just a shot in the dark, isn't it? Just got to pray that nothing bad happens as we get ready to go into ice and snow season.
Well, from all the usual news we do at the top of the 5 o'clock hour, you could just go steal one for the kids.
Well, that's an option. If you're going to just leave your car running with the keys in it outside of a gas station, you know, kids, take your pick.
Actually, that's a good idea. Yeah, just have you and your kids just okay. Go sit in a gas station.
Let's back this car back up a little bit here. Maybe a little bit deeper into the parking spot than my daughter's was. No, we are not actually encouraging people to commit crimes in the city of Minneapolis. We have just noticed there is an epiphany of people out there that just basically want to leave a car running with the keys in it outside of gas stations. The only thing missing is take me on a sign on the outside of it.
I mean, you don't need to register the license plates anymore. Oh, save a lot of money doing that.
This guy kept this car clean. What do you know? Jeez. Well, I mean, it's
that's one option. You know, just one. I'm sure you have other ways to get a new car.
Well, I mean, I was thinking about the old idea. We had the tricycles. You know, tricycle. We could do tricycles and just, you know, get people to pay for tricycles. But that's my child. Do I want my child riding on a scooter? Oh, God, no, no, no. Next to hammocks. That's the sign my child's gone down a bad path.
Oh, I'm sure the two in the house would be thrilled. Yo, Charlie got to drive to school. You guys are going to have to bike. Scooter, I ought to go over real.
Scooter. You get a lime scooter it about 10 miles in winter. Good luck, kids. You got a trombone. Yeah. Here's your trombone. Off you go. Oh, God. I mean, how long do I, you know, it is. It's the paradigm of it. It's the paradigm. How long do you give the system? And you know, I don't know. I don't know. I will say the, you know, it is the frustrating thing every parent has to kind of deal with because it's, you know, where is that line? And you always don't want to have a situation where you just paid for, you know, $1,000 repair on a car and then all of a sudden the car is done. You know, you don't want to do that. So 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. My advisor for automotive needs is Gary from Minneapolis. He's kind enough to call. Hey, Gary, welcome on in. Good afternoon, sir.
Oh, it's nice to call you. You know, I bought a Prius out there after you were ever. I told them about you in 950.
Nice. Thank you.
Well, anyways, I got to say, Republicans are at it again. The Democrats are spending the deficit and debt. And remember when they gave over $2 trillion to the super rich? Didn't pay for it. That's the difference. We pay for our spending whenever we can. They're trying to block raise the taxes on their big boys again. And, you know, they're still the party of Depression Hoover, the Trump Republican Hoover party. And now they're worse because they're getting all these stupid wars, you know, like Bush's wars and stuff. Anyways, Thank you, man, for letting me shoot off my mouse.
No problem. So Gary in Minneapolis, trade in the vehicle. That's what his recommendation is. That's what I took out of that. Trade in the vehicle, go get a new Prius.
He said something about finding good financing.
Make sure you get the all-wheel drive, because that's what you want. That's what you want in the winters here in Minnesota. Thanks, Gare. No, he's right. I by the way, you don't have to remind me about the $2 trillion giveaway of Gary. I think we all remember that. Every economist on the planet looking at that tax bill saying, "Whoa, it's going to make a massive deficit." And Republicans going, "No, it won't." 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. So I'm emotionally compromised. But I did you see the sunrise this morning? Holy cow, was that brilliant. I got one really good shot that's over on the Twitter and the Facebook that you've seen. Have you seen the photo that's there?
I have not, but is this calendar quality you're thinking?
It actually might be.
Oh,
this nice. This might be. I might have calendar quality image here. So there was that good thing. But as well, I mean, I needed that sunrise after this morning. If you are like me, I do have some conservatives that I do follow. And it sometimes is comical how all of them it's like they get like salmon swimming in the same direction. All of them all of a sudden start posting, picking, you know, images like, oh, there's voter fraud here and there's voter fraud there. And it was like all of a sudden this morning, every conservative I knew was posting a news story, various news stories, not the same one, various news stories about such called election fraud here and election fraud here. And it was filled with conservatives pushing stories on how either the local 2021 election were already rife with fraud, or how the 2022 midterm elections were already compromised as well. Baseless allegations, basically, linked to dubious news outlets at best. You know, it's like WarEagleNewsChannel.com, .tv, .ca, Canada. Oh, yeah.
I would think more .ru. I think that's the Russian.
Yes, we are just a good news outlet here located in Topeka, Moscow.
Many of the stories didn't actually document any fraud at all, by the way. I did click into a few of them, but rather make something routine seem nefarious, seem illegal, intentionally omitting facts which show there was nothing illegal at all. The article's poster then makes every one of them made the same exact thing. Came back and they said the same exact thing. See provable voter fraud. No, I don't see. So I spent about 10 minutes. I went and looked at three of the so-called allegations, said the accusations are laughable as an understatement. I actually, I think, though, we need to correctly identify there's actually a far more evil intention here at work that I want to make sure I mention. That's behind the scenes with these pre-election false claims. Outside of a twisted, warped minds of conservatives, there isn't any massive voter fraud which will undoubtedly swing either the 2021 or 22 elections. There just isn't. These posts are about undermining faith in the election system and validating right-wing victimhood. But there's method to their madness as well. There's a growing mentality, and we had someone talk about this, I think it was yesterday, called in. Far right-wing circles are embracing the idea of we just need to fight another civil war. That, you know, Jethro and the guys are going to strap on their weapons, go on out to the farm field. I guess they think that the entire military is going to, you know, desert the country and join them, which is not going to happen. And that, I guess they think, and I have zero doubt that there are some members in the military that might run away from the forces and join you guys. I have no doubt there might be some police officers or county sheriffs who might jump on board with you. But you guys are going to be gross later. It will be a hoot. Anyway, these nutbags are incensed that Trump lost, that he wasn't installed as president afterwards. And now anyone with the Biden sign is the enemy. And this is what these fools want. They're also brainwashed by right-wing media. The crappy lives that they have are a direct result of the Republicans they have put in power that have made the policies for them for 30 to 40 years. That is undeniable. But instead of voting out Republicans, voting in Democrats, they'd rather embrace the idea of shooting, executing their relatives, neighbors, coworkers, about a third of the country. That's kind of what that's kind of the rational thought process of these individuals. But far right wing stooges know a large portion of the Republican Party is not quite ready to build a foxhole in front of their Wyzetta mansion and open fire on Phil next door level of paranoia they reside in. So what they're doing is poisoning the party from within. Republicans complaining about non-existent voter fraud in an election which hasn't even happened yet is about trying to convince reluctant Republicans to either allow them to commit mass murder under the argument of freedom or to grab a gun and go along with their purge. They seem determined to rip this country in two because they're at a point where the gerrymandering, the obscene money advantage, the oppressive voting rules, the outright cheating they've done to win the last 40 years, it's no longer working. The only way Republicans can stay in power is to force themselves onto the rest of the country. It's the abusive ex-boyfriend approach, and I'm not basically saying that because I want to dismiss or demean actual abuse. I mean, that is a bad, horrible thing, but that's what this is. If you won't love me, then I'll force you to love me. It's evil dictator 101. Point out, all you can do with these people, and if you're like me, all you can do with these people is point out how badly they'd lose a civil war, and they would lose one badly. The military won't go along with them. It will be a hoot to see their faces when the 10th Mountain Division destroys their barricade outside of their town. The post-Civil War, World War II world might be the Republican nightmare that finally wakes them up. But challenging right-wing clowns, you got to do this. Don't let them go unanswered. You got to go out there. You have to do it because let them know we see what they're trying to do. Maybe it will make them up, the fact that they're entertaining the idea of a civil war based on laughable conspiracy theories. Might not change a dang thing, but at least, yeah, you tried to warn them. You tried. You tried to warn them on that. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. I'll take some calls. Stein coming up here in about 15 minutes. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Alan is in White Bear Lake calling us up. Hey, Alan, how are you today?
Doing okay. My dad had a rule as to when to trade in a car.
What's that?
When the total cost of gasoline or diesel was twice as much as got less than twice as much as the maintenance. So if your maintenance gets to be half the cost of what you use for fuel, then you're in the point where you should be thinking of buying a new one.
That's actually not a bad thing. Although with the cost of gas today, that's actually it's a running curve, isn't it? So if my repairs are half the cost of gas, then it's time to go. Oh, got it. All right. You know what, Alan?
I've used it too. So that's mine because.
All right. I'm going to run the numbers on this, Alan, tonight. I'm going to go through this. I'm going to see where we're at. And, I think because I got to be pretty close to that. Now that you say that, I think I got to be pretty close to that. And Alan, thank you very much. I appreciate the phone call. And sometimes, it's sometimes dads give the best advice because, you know what? That's actually really good. I like that. If your repairs are half the price of the amount of money you're spending on gas, that's not bad.
Did he say, I missed what he said at the beginning. Was that a full tank of gas he was talking?
Well, yeah. I mean, every time you fill up gas.
Yeah, no. Okay. That's interesting way to think of it, yeah.
Yeah, that's actually not a bad way to think of it at all. I'm intrigued. Steve is in Bloomington and wanted to chime in. Welcome on in, Steve.
Hey, Matt. Thanks for taking my call. Really appreciate it.
You got it.
I just completed poll book training for the upcoming election, local elections, city council and school board and whatnot. And I have to go through three other trainings in order to be able to serve as an election judge, even though I have been an election judge for 26 previous elections.
Okay.
So every time an election judge serves, they have to be trained again. So, and I will tell you this, any precinct is made up of both Democrats and Republicans, as well as independents, and they all get along.
Yeah.
Unbelievably. One of the things the other thing is that our procedures are locked down so tight. The chance of anybody, voting fraudulently is like statistically impossible. You add on top of that the fact that if you vote illegally or fraudulently in the state of Minnesota, you could be fined $10,000 and be sent to prison for 5 years. So where's the upside?
Well, and Steve, here's the thing. Steve, here's the crazy part: is we just had a Republican saying, "Oh, there's electronic irregularities." I said, "Wait a minute, we have paper ballots." So, I mean, at any point, if someone wants to do a hand recount, we can do that. We got the paper ballots. So, are you saying the counting machines?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's like saying the calculator's wrong. Well, I don't think the calculator's wrong. And if you have any doubts, you can always question and do the hand recount. And just, you know, find out that your allegations, thanks, Steve, I appreciate the phone call, find out your allegations are wrong. But, you know, it's the election judges. I mean, election judges used to be a real simple way for anyone in a community, it didn't matter the political party, to do their civic duty, to help be part of the system. And today, you're there. And you've got people saying, there's a black guy trying to vote. You need to triple check his ID before you allow him to vote, or else, mega, mega. You have that stuff going on. And you have people accusing you of, I saw them scratch their nose. That was a signal to their Uber lords to basically that they were throwing the election. You know, it's that kind of craziness. You see, the Republicans, and I'm dead serious when I went through that rant. I'm dead serious when I say this. The Republicans are at the point where it doesn't matter the gerrymandering. It doesn't matter the obscene money advantage. It doesn't matter. I mean, they're trying their hardest. Take a look at the voting laws they're trying to pass now. I mean, they are on the border of just going white male landowners are the only ones can vote, because that's about the only way they're going to consistently stay in power. And I guarantee you there's going to be some Republican that's going to make the argument about that. But they're just trying their hardest right now to completely and totally just devalue the elections and say that no election in this country has ever been done fairly at all, because they're just sore losers. They think they're entitled to victories that they cannot win. And that is who the Republican Party is today. And it's funny, because I was thinking about this earlier. This is the same Republican Party. I have zero doubt that there's going to be, in some Republican state down the road, there's going to be some, you know, in a dumpster, they're going to find four boxes of Democratic votes, ballots in a dumpster someone just threw away. And then someone's going to like, oh my God, look at this. This is actually voter fraud. And they're going to be like, oh no, that's not. There's nothing to look into there. That's just, why are you so against them throwing out paper, Matt? They're just trying to keep their office clean. So you're not for a clean office. I see what's going on. No, that's what these people are for. We used to actually pride ourselves in our elections. But when people are sore freaking losers, you whiny, pathetic babies on the right, you whiny, pathetic babies, when you're sore losers and you cannot win, then it becomes, we were robbed. No, you weren't. You just suck. That's what it is. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Hopefully, one Jeff Stein when we do return. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
Jeff. J-E-F-F, Jeff. J-E-F-F.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Jeff Stein's our national and presidential expert, noted author. Find his books over at Next Chapter Books and TotallyIowa.com. Make fantastic Halloween gifts. Also, you can as well get the Iowa Business Report, his daily showdown in Iowa. The Iowa Politics Report comes to us from KXEL in Cedar Falls, Waterloo, where Jeff Stein is residing. Hiya, Jeff.
So now, I am so dumb.
Okay, how dumb are you?
I have three separate daily podcasts. that you just mentioned.
Yes.
Most of them. The Iowa Business Report, the Iowa Politics Report, and my history module, Iowa Almanac, they're now all on the podcast machines. So if you go to Apple Podcast or Stitcher or Spotify or, you know, wherever fine podcasts are served, you can subscribe, and then I'll be sitting here hitting refresh on the screen every 5 minutes to see if anybody cares what I have to say.
Okay, it's an oxymoron to say fine podcast. I'm just going to let you know.
Well, if it helps, this is how I justify it. They're really radio shows.
Yes.
That air on real live radio stations, you know, like this one. This is a real live radio station. This is not just some hobby farm.
Yeah.
And but I'm thrifty, so it's like, fine, you want them on the podcast, here, you can go have the podcast. And so there you go.
That's
you kids who like you some podcasts, you go subscribe to those so that I can have some inflated sense of self-worth that's really not valid.
It's always entertaining because this occasionally does happen. I was like, I'll get contact from some guy from Bulgaria is like, found you on iTunes. Very good show. And you're like, oh okay. Do I resonate there? You know?
I'm big in Bulgaria. Yeah, that's great. That's,
yeah. Oh, we'll be doing a show in Sofia. So the...
there's a coffee shop there that I'm sure will have you.
Oh, God. So I'm going to ask you, this is a very important question because this is news that's come down in Minneapolis, St. Paul. And of course, when it's about Minnesota, St. Paul, we have to look at us. We're shiny and bright. Gaffigan, Jim Gaffigan, Jeff Foxworthy, yes. Both of them performing in Minnesota here. Gaffigan's this weekend over at the State Theater. I think, I'm not sure exactly where Foxworthy's at. He's at the end of the month. They're recording their shows in Minnesota for the Netflix specials. So when you see them in the next time on Netflix, Gaffigan and Foxworthy will be from Minnesota. Which one would you rather go to, Gaffigan or Foxworthy?
Oh, wow. That is outstanding.
Yes.
That is a tremendous, tremendous question. I'm going to go Foxworthy.
Foxworthy's not bad.
The reason is I don't have children. And Gaffigan, well, a lot of his material is about the fact that he has, what, 17 children? I don't
yes.
know, three, five, however many. And they all live in an apartment in New York. And so it's a lot of humor that is tied to, you know, being a hapless father. And I can't relate. I'm hapless in every other respect, but I'm not a hapless father. Foxworthy makes fun of people that I see every day, and so that's where I go. So what about you? You're Gaffigan-esque.
Well, I look like him. Yeah. I am. Oh boy, that's a tough one. Gaffigan. I mean Gaffigan. Both of them have just classic comedy bits. I mean, that still, after 20 times of listening to them, are hilarious. They still make you laugh. And Foxworthy, gosh, I mean, he does that Southern country thing, but he does it so relatably.
To me, it's kind of like the Southern thing is not just Southern.
No, it's not.
It's sort of like, I've come upon this lately, and I think you'll agree. When I talk about the heartland of America, we often think geographic, but it's really a mindset. I mean, you know, people from New Jersey can relate to people in the Midwest if they have a certain background, et cetera. It's more of a feeling. And certainly, you know, people who are proud to be called rednecks are not limited to the Southern states, although stereotypes do have a genesis, don't
yes.
they?
Yes, I know. I would probably say Gaffigan. I just sort of this is that, you know, Foxworthy, I think, is I don't think he's done by any means, but he's kind of a little bit more on the tail end of his career, while Gaffigan still seems to be going upwards. And, you know, and it just is kind of one of those things where, and you know, in some comedians, and both of them have a similarity, I don't say this lightly, to like Robin Williams, where Robin Williams, even later in his career, did specials which were phenomenal, which is just as hilarious. Richard Pryor, same thing. Just like Carlin, yeah. Just same thing. Just they never lost it. They were always consistent. Seinfeld, same thing. And
yeah.
So, but I mean, I think that I probably would just go with Gaffigan because he still seems to be up on that meteoric rise.
Well, let's face it. When you've done the Hot Pocket routine.
Oh, God.
I mean, you know, there's your career, and you might be a redneck is a career. It's really hard to top any of that.
Oh, yeah.
But you're right. Gaffigan has gotten much broader with his pieces on CBS Sunday Morning and those sorts of things. That's usually where I see his work lately, because I'm not a high-paid afternoon drive time radio host in a major market, so I can't afford the Netflix.
Go, if you do, go watch the Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee with Seinfeld and Gaffigan. The line he has about the Steve Miller Band at the end of that thing is one of the funniest damn things, and it put me on the floor for 20 minutes. So I'm just going to say it like that. I'm not going to say it because I can't deliver it. Go see it.
Okay.
So this is an interesting development. I'll get to cinema here in just a second here. The Democrat, you sent me a lovely little note on that. But yeah. I want to point out that Trump today has basically warned the GOP. Now, I think this is the fear of this investigative committee in the House. And that's really in the House and the Senate here. Investigations. Former President Trump on Wednesday put out another statement complaining about the loss in 2020. If we don't solve the presidential election fraud of 2020, which we have thoroughly and conclusively documented, he says, which you haven't because you got thrown out of court every time, Republicans will not be voting in 22 or 24. It's an interesting statement, but to me, that's clearly Trump saying to the Republican leadership and to all Republican politicians, here's the deal. I've got the ability to turn the faucet off if I want to. And if you guys don't get out there and basically candy coat the insurrection, candy coat the attempt to overthrow the government, candy coat the attempt to overthrow the Department of Justice, candy coat all this stuff and diminish my involvement in this, and somehow install me as president again immediately, well, then I'm going to take my toys, a.k.a. my voters, and go home.
It is interesting to me in the same week when he is saying to the National Archivist, don't release records from my presidency to a House investigatory committee. I am writing this to protect, as he phrased it, the office of the presidency. I'm not really sure that's how you phrase that. So this is the little pleasant diversion, because, of course, the current president did not invoke executive privilege, which he could have done to protect the papers of his predecessor.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what I'm watching.
Well, by the way, and we should also mention, as you say that, there actually was a Supreme Court ruling on this under Nixon, which basically he said that he didn't want to hand over his documents. And the Supreme Court, I think it was unanimous, basically said, you do not have executive privilege when it comes to crimes. And if we are investigating a crime, you cannot just claim of executive privilege. So this is established law that he, you know, if there is a crime that has happened, a.k.a. the insurrection of 1-6, well, and there's clearly enough evidence that there was some, you know, at least some coordination through the White House on some of these things that were going on. You can't claim. Talking about seeing an archivist trying to hit above his pay grade. But you can sit there and say anything you like. But this is I actually was reading about this under Nixon. That was where this really first got established, and it got solved pretty quickly by the Supreme Court.
And what often happens, you don't know in any sort of government document dump or pile, you don't know if there are things in there that could be sensitive. And so there's typically a judicial process where someone like a judge in a situation combs through it all, reviews it all. The Latin term is in camera, meaning in secret, in confidential quarters. And then can determine there's nothing here that would violate confidences, would be a detriment to national security, that sort of thing. And if, in fact, presidential papers, documents of the White House shows criminal activity, it doesn't have to be criminal activity of the White House. It's still open.
Yeah.
Okay, so you could consistently say no one at the White House had anything to do with January 6th and still have the documents be turned over because they might have information related to others. I am watching for Jim Jordan's reaction to all of this. I don't care what Steve Bannon says. He's the highest profile one that they're threatening with subpoena. I want to see what Jim Jordan says. And the reason is Congressman Jordan from Ohio, early on, indicated he had talked to the president as January 6th was playing out. He later had to concede that he spoke to him multiple times, but could not exactly remember when and the substance. If Jim Jordan gets nervous or extremely quiet, and again, the Klieg light for a camera comes on and he's like a moth to the flame, all right, if all of a sudden he's hard to book on some of these shows on cable news, then you know they're getting close with regard to incriminating material that might adversely impact the liberty of people who worked in the White House.
It's not, though, I think, a stretch or a reach by any means to look at, regardless of, you know, the process, how they're going to get the information, if they get the information or not. Clearly, Trump is very concerned at this point. Because, like you said, he's flailing about trying to find any government employee that he can threaten into not handing over things. And at the same time, he's now basically saying to all Republicans, unless you basically make this your number one priority, I will turn off the voters. I mean, you are around more conservative voters because your station does do more conservative programming. I mean, you know, do you feel as if Trump basically said in 2022 and 2024, which, by the way, this might be a hint that he's not going to run in 2024. But if he was to say to the Republican voters, "Don't go vote," that would be cataclysmic for Republicans.
Let's see. I'm gonna split hairs here a little bit, but I think you and the audience I'll try to make it so that the distinction is clear. There is a difference between. There was massive fraud in the 2020 election, and we need to ensure election integrity.
Of course.
I think, well, but the former president conflates the two. And I think it's a losing issue for him going forward if he keeps saying, "I was robbed." He can't get past that. It was clear when he was in Iowa this past weekend. No, I did not attend. he just can't get past it. And there are a lot of people who say, "I want to make sure that I am confident in the system." If he keeps going on in 2022 campaigning for Republicans and honking about the fact that he got rooked in 2020, that's not going to help any of those Republicans, and it certainly isn't going to help his effort. He's got to have a better campaign theme than "I should have won last time," or let me use in his phrase, "I won last time, so I get to go back this time." Because that's not going to sell. I don't think that's going to sell. So when you say, you know, how do Republicans feel about this? They like the Trump initiative and a lot of the policies. They grew tired of him. And so we've talked about this before, if you had somebody who had Trump policies but wasn't Trump, that could sell with a ton of Republicans and some independents as well.
What I honestly think of this all is that he's just basically trying to figure out who's loyal, who's not. And really at this point, if I'm a Republican, I would be concerned because this would be a big sign. He really doesn't care. And you from the very beginning of this guy, you said he wasn't a Republican. But now he's really showing it. He's like, "This is about me. This is not about the party. And that unless you guys are willing to fall on some swords, you know, this is, you know, this, you know, I'm going to take, like I said, I will destroy this." And it is an interesting concept because it really does put Republicans in a really tough spot because, let's face it, once again, Trump's only lost popularity since the election. It's not like, you know, there is this massive wave of people demanding he's reinstalled. And I don't think his act is going to play well a second time around, as you just pointed out. I mean, it's just this belly aching and whining at this point. You know, it really has put the Republicans in a horrible spot.
In 2016... that campaign, when he came down the escalator in 2015 into 2016, he campaigned on an agenda that was forward-thinking, even though a lot of it was looking back, as in Make America Great Again, use that for whatever purpose, but it was, here's what I'm going to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
Everything he's talking about now is, look how bad the current guy screwed up everything that I had in place, and I got rooked with the election. That's not the kind of, I mean, it's the belly aching, right? He's belly aching about how he was wrong. Even those who agree with him, and there are plenty, even those who agree with him are getting a little tired of the act. Let me suggest something that I did mention on the air this week. At the Trump rally this past Saturday, Trump endorsed U.S. Senator Charles Grassley for an eighth term in office. Now, why did he do that? There is a Republican primary next year with someone who has painted himself as a full Trump supporter, a state senator who declared his candidacy long before anybody knew what Grassley was going to do. So there is a primary fight, and Trump brought Grassley on stage and said he endorses him. The other guy was in the crowd, too. Not sure he stayed after that, but you get the idea. All right, now here's two things. One, I mentioned this on this program before. I asked Grassley a couple of months ago, is Donald Trump the head of the Republican Party? And his answer was, we have no head of the Republican Party, and we won't until the 2024 nomination is secure. That, I thought, was an important bit of distance. So you get to this rally on Saturday. Trump talks about how great Grassley was to him, and Grassley, in his acceptance of it, says, and this is almost verbatim, it was very short, I was born at night, but it wasn't last night. And I know that when somebody who gets 91% of the Republican vote in my state says he wants to endorse you, you take that endorsement. Unquote.
Yeah.
Now, where's the reciprocal endorsement? Where is the, Mr. President, thank you so much. I'm so grateful. You did such a wonderful job for the country, blah, blah, blah. Essentially, the guy who has not lost an election since 1958 and has a pretty good sense about things, therefore, said, well, you're popular with Republicans, so if you're going to endorse me, I guess I better accept it. That is about the biggest distance between fawning adulation and boycotting the event that, you could possibly have imagined. Trump, of course, just went on like nothing happened. But I say that, Matt, in a, it was too long a story, but I tell you that because I think you're going to see a lot of office holders accept the benefit but distance themselves enough that the spray doesn't hit.
But also, Trump owes Grassley for, you know, holding up the Garland nomination then as well, rushing ahead 4 years later with RBG's open seat. And so there's payback there.
But Trump doesn't owe anybody in Trump's mind. Well, Trump doesn't owe anybody. I mean, because he's Trump. They all owe him loyalty.
Vlad.
He doesn't owe loyalty.
Vlad. He loves his Vladdy. 952-946-6205. When we do come on back, let's talk Christensen and because she herself single-handedly is trying to derail the entire Democratic agenda. Jeff Stein joining us. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. The Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Jeff Stein joining us for his usual weekly visit. It's interesting. You did send me a quick little note here on Manchin and Sinema. And it's interesting because Manchin himself, of course, he's got family that's in big pharma. But he does seem, I mean, one of the big holdup points here is regulation of drug prices, which is wildly popular in this country. The vast majority of people want drug prices more regulated. And yes. yet one of the things which is really, you know, is really unfortunate for the Democrats is Kristen Sinema is it clearly it seems like she basically pharma got in touch with her, wrote her a big check. And so now that she is basically no way I'm going to go along with this. My guess is going to be there's a lobbying gig waiting for her as soon as she gets done with her term, which will probably be at the end of this current term. And because the Democrats are, I mean, they're going to abandon her in droves. So even if she is the nominee, she's not going to win the general election. But the reality is that, I mean, it is interesting that she seems to be just such a shallow person that, you know, one check, that's it. I'll basically be the one person roadblock in the Democratic agenda.
I would really commend the listeners to that little snippet from the newsletter in Politico today, because what it basically said was there's all this talk in Washington about trying to get Sinema and Manchin on board. But the reality is they are diametrically opposed to each other on certain things that are supposedly line in the sand things. And it has nothing to do with top dollar amount. It actually has to do with programmatic issues, as you just accurately noted. You've got the clean energy proposals that will really hurt the West Virginia coal industry. And so in the bill, they had worker retraining efforts. And Manchin says, that's welfare. My people won't want that. Okie dokie, we're going to decimate your industry. You don't have a problem with that, but you don't want help for your workers who vote for you. It's really an interesting thing because they're each supposedly saying, we've told the White House long ago where we're at. What's all the fuss about? We just don't negotiate in public. Of the two, however, Sinema is the one that is, shall I say, least consistent.
Oh, God.
Especially with regard to the big, it, you know, it's kind of like, well, where is she on this? Oh, didn't see that coming. So there are some serious, serious issues with Democrats getting to 50 in the Senate, and has nothing to do with top line dollar amount.
Well, and there's also, I'm guessing there are other checks that have been written, because this is a woman who ran to be on a big pro-environmental side, talking, you know, talking green energy, all these things. And now she herself is like, oh, no, we're not going to do all that stuff. And a lot of people are like, the thing that's crazy about her is people keep asking her, well, what do you want? And she's not talking to anyone.
No, suppose she claims in the piece to Politico, she claims that she told the White House long ago, she's just not telling the media and she's not telling members of the House of Representatives. Hard to negotiate when you don't, you know, if you're one of the players, when you don't know what the other side's goal is. How can you help them get to the finish line if you don't know what the rules of the game are? And that's kind of the position she has put them in. I understand not negotiating with talk show hosts or the press, but you might want to let others in your party in on the whole thing.
You might want to give them a little smidge. I got news for you. I can't afford tickets to Gaffigan either. So
that's fair.
That's fair. Jeff Stein, once again, will spotlight this Iowa Politics Report. One of his three podcasts. We'll post that as well. Yeah, we'll be back. Jeff, we'll talk to you next week, okay? Hour two is up next. Broadcasting live from the Rudy Luther Toyota Studios at AM 950 Radio, it's the Matt McNeil Show. Matt, Brett Gaffigan or Foxworthy? Who would you go see if you had the choice?
I'd probably go maybe Foxworthy on that one.
You would? So that's two Foxworthy, one Gaffigan for me. So maybe I'll ask Erin May Quaid. She's going to join us. The most burning question I've got for you. She, in case you missed it, she announced today she is going to be running for a Senate seat. This upcoming election, it's currently held by a DFLer, so that means it's going to be a primary. If he decides to run, we'll talk to her about that, her decision, why she wants to come back, and what is her problem with the current representation. Obviously, I want to find out why she is definitely going to, you know, it's unknown if she's going to challenge a Democrat, but obviously she's taking that chance, so I want to find out why, you know, if she feels that there needs to be a change there. We'll get into that. What do you think? You mentioned the AP News guys. They've been fawning all over Kirk going to space.
Oh, it's been the top of the lead story every day. Just, what a waste. When you consider that how many people are struggling at Amazon right now and this guy's launching a rocket ship into space, come on.
It's a joke. It really is. What if Shatner got up there and just freaked out?
That would have been great.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Turn around. This scares me. No one would ever know. There is no way on the planet they'd ever let anyone know that's what happened. It's going to be hilarious, though. I got to do my Frank Drebin quote. Are you ready?
Oh, yeah. What do you got?
Hey, nice beaver. Sorry. Oh, police squad, I love you. A beaver the size of a small bear, yikes, is in the running to be Minnesota's official fossil.
Wait, we have an official fossil? That's the first question.
We've got our crack archaeological team working on this one, I guess. The Science Museum of Minnesota has been leading the effort to have an official state fossil in Minnesota.
Oh, so it's new. Okay.
Yeah. Apparently, we are one of these seven states that doesn't have an official fossil.
I bet you Iowa's is Chuck Grassley. All right. There's the bad joke for the day. There we go.
Bad joke. That's a quality. Fossil means they're dead and buried, though. You know,
he kind of is, though.
He'll win again.
He'll win. They'll get 70%.
Oh, dear Lord.
Yeah.
The museum pitched several of its own candidates and took recommendations from Minnesotans before holding a vote on Wednesday, National Fossil Day. The museum announced the big winner, a giant beaver. I'm not going to try to pronounce it in Latin, which was found in St. Paul. So you found a giant beaver in St. Paul, you say? All right. Just move. Just shut up. Say nothing else.
We're moving. Ready for the dump button there. Yes.
The giant beaver was added as a write-in candidate in the museum's campaign. The large rodent captured 25% of the votes among the 9 fossil candidates, edging out the next highest vote getter, more than 1,000 votes, the museum said in a news release. Nearly 11,500 votes were cast from people across Minnesota. That's a lot of people that like beaver. Alex Hastings, Science Museum of Minnesota's Fitzpatrick Chair of Paleontology, who I'm sure is enjoying all the beaver jokes, not just me, but every freaking human being on the planet.
Oh, they all think they're funny. They're the first ones to tell him the joke, too. When he's...
Is confident the voting process will lead to the state legislator declaring a giant beaver the official state fossil. What is the giant beaver? The giant beaver probably looked a lot like modern beavers with buck teeth and aquatic lifestyle when it lived in the Twin Cities in Freeborn County 2.58 million years ago to 10,000 years ago. Man, they almost made it. They were here for a while, and then what happened to you? You almost got to modern times. Don't get me wrong. I would love to go out to the parks and see some giant beavers. I really would. But 10,000 years ago, the giant beaver, well, it ceased to exist. However, different from the beavers that were in Minnesota today, the giant beaver was, well, giant. Small bear, 200 pounds.
Wait, these things? Wow.
That's a huge beaver.
200
pounds? Sorry. A fossil of the giant beaver found in St. Paul is on display at the Science Museum of Minnesota. Hey, kids, guess what we're going to go see today? Minnesotans have an affinity for the fossil. I'm just reading the copy at this point. In 1988, state legislators proposed giant beaver fossil as a state fossil, but it didn't make it through the legislative process. Who was against the giant beaver?
Who vetoed the beavers?
Oh, God. Who filibustered the beaver? I want to know.
That was their top campaign issue.
I'm anti-giant beaver. Oh, you guys in the Republican Party are way too uptight. I'm just going to let you know, man. You need to free yourself, man. Get out there. I'm going to move on. There is no good of me.
I just love the copy they wrote in there. It appears Minnesota are fans of the fossil. They had to write it that way.
They're fans of the... Oh, yes. They're all fans of it.
Yeah, yeah.
952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. All right. Everyone had a little laugh, a little joy, a little happiness. We talked Gaffigan. We talked about Kirk freaking out in space. Giant beavers. You got your laughing? All right. It's time for the Minnesota coronavirus update. Wednesday's COVID-19 update from the Minnesota Department of Health includes 2,388 new cases, 24 newly reported deaths, including 3 people in their 30s, 2 from Ramsey County, 1 from Blue Earth County. The state's death toll is now 8,354 since the start of the pandemic. Of the total deaths, 56.1% were residents of long-term care. That number has gone down. It is amazing. We're down to 56.1. At one point, that number was in the 80s. It was almost all the initial people that died from this pandemic were almost all in long-term care facilities. But thanks to Republican stupidity and arrogance in rural Minnesota, I'll get to that in a second, it's actually come down dramatically and now affecting people all over the place. As of October 11th, the state reported that 3,430,921 people have received at least one dose of the COVID vaccine. 3,262,423 people have completed the vaccine series. The state has administered 190,415 third dose booster shots. Apparently very popular. People are telling me that there are lines at wherever they have the booster shots right now. So that's good. That's a good thing. Through October 12th, the number of people with COVID hospitalized in Minnesota was 990. That's up from 960 on Tuesday. Of those hospitalized, 260 people are in intensive care. 730 were in general hospital care. State health officials have confirmed to bring me in the news that hospital capacity in Minnesota is at its lowest now compared to any other point during the pandemic. I'll get to that in a second. The 2,388 positive results on Wednesday were from 29,068 completed tests, creating a test positivity rate of 8.21%. Apparently, Minnesota's test positivity rate the past 7 days is 9.1%. Minnesota is currently experiencing the worst point for staffed ICU bed availability than any other time during the pandemic so far. Not just since spring, not just since the beginning of this year, not just since, say, fall, the entire pandemic, we are experiencing the worst staffage, the worst bed availability for ICU, staffed ICU beds since the pandemic began. There were 45 staffed ICU beds available in Minnesota as of Tuesday. Only 45. I want to repeat, we are a state of 5.6 million people. We only currently have 45 staffed ICU beds available in Minnesota as of Tuesday. And the reason that is because we have too many idiots who sat up there saying, I'm never getting vaccinated. And then all of a sudden they got sick. And all of a sudden they didn't trust hospitals before. They didn't trust the nurses before. They didn't trust the doctors before. They didn't trust the scientists before. But then they got sick. And all of a sudden is, you go take care of me. And so these clowns are taking up every damn ICU bed in the state. And people that need those ICU beds are actually running out of options in Minnesota, for God's sakes. 45, that's it. Most of them, by the way, seem to be down in Olmsted on the southeastern part of the state, so Mayo Clinic area. Well, there's like six. There are like six available in the Twin Cities Metro, total. Because when you run out of space in your rural hospitals, then all of a sudden you're hat in hand in Minneapolis-St. Paul. Don't you guys remember? You guys wanted to secede from us. Don't you remember that? You wanted to go over and join South Dakota. Go! Just go, 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 go. Why don't you go to the Sioux Falls hospitals? Why don't you go to the Bismarck hospitals? Making life damn dangerous for people right now because of stupidity. And a misguided idea that you guys gotta own the libs. Stupid fools. Stupid fools. The lowest point of staff bed availability during the pandemic, Minnesota Department of Health is closely monitoring the situation, constant contact with their healthcare leaders about the steps they're taking to manage capacity and about the help they need. COVID-19 dashboard shows as of Tuesday, there were 990 people in Minnesota hospitals being treated for COVID-19. There are now 48 staffed ICU beds available, reveals there are only six beds available in the entire Twin Cities regional metro. That means 99.1% of all available ICU beds are filled in the metro area. Limited capacity often leads to longer waits for care and patients being diverted to areas of the state where beds and staff are available. But it is clear healthcare facilities are stressed everywhere in Minnesota. The current wave of disease dwarfs the spring surge that saw a maximum of 719 people hospitalized at one time. And even though the most almost 1,000 patients being treated now isn't near the approximately 1,600 patients that were admitted during the peak of the 2020 fall winter surge, staffing shortages have resulted in an even more dire situation. We really need all Minnesotans to do their part, too. The best thing we can all do is to help preserve hospital and healthcare capacities to reduce the amount of disease transmission that's happening in our communities, and particularly in our greater Minnesota communities and our schools, where we still have many children under 12 who cannot yet receive that protection from vaccines, which makes such a big difference. Evolution of the disease has followed a clear pattern around the country, as areas with lower vaccination rates have now been burdened with higher rates of infection. For example, of the nearly 8,000 new cases that were reported Saturday through Monday, 61% were outside the 7-county Twin Cities metro area. So I want to make sure we understand this. Just for your knowledge, in the 7-county metro area, that's 55.5% of the state's population lives in the 7-county metro area, which means outside of the metro area, only 44.5% of the state's population lives outside of the 7-county metro area. That 44.5 is responsible for 61% of the entire infections right now. Fools. Just fools. Dumb, dumb idiots. God, get vaccinated. You absolute morons, get vaccinated. Jeez. The assumption is the metro area has a higher vaccination rate, so despite population density working in the Twin Cities case, rates are higher in greater Minnesota where vaccination rates are commonly lower. The 20 highest county rates in Minnesota outside of the metro area, all 20, the worst 20 counties in the state of Minnesota with their case rates. Here you go. This is out of 10,000 people. Clearwater County, 129.4 cases out of 10,000 people. To give you an idea of how bad that is comparatively, Hennepin County is currently at 19.8. Hennepin County currently has 19.8 of 10,000 people with cases, COVID cases. Clearwater County is over 11 times higher than Hennepin County, 129.4. Monument County, 90.8. Wadena County, 88.7. Becker County, 76.1. Yellow Medicine County, 70.9. Beltrami County, 70.5. Traverse County, 68.9. Red Lake County, 64.9. Redwood County, 62.6. Marshall County, 57.5. Todd County, 56.9. Couchiching County, 55.4. Martin County, 55.1. Cass County, 54.4. Lincoln County, 54.3. Lake County, 53.0. Benton County, 52.8. Hubbard County, 52.7. Steele County, 51.8. Crow Wing County, 51.5. All of them, outstate counties, all of them. All of them over twice as bad. Over twice as bad as the Minneapolis-St. Paul metro area. And I actually screwed up the math there. They're not 11 times worse. They're 6 times worse, which is still pretty dang bad. But even so, the 20th worst county, all of the top 20 counties, outstate Minnesota counties, the 20th worst county still is over twice as bad as Hennepin County right now. But I'm showing those libs. Why can't I breathe? We get to a point in the state, I'll tell you what, we get to the point in the state where we actually have to start rationing health care. Can you imagine what the belly aching is going to be from these Republicans who are basically told, oh, I'm sorry, you're unvaccinated. You're going to be a lower priority than the person having a stroke. They don't need it. I need it. Why didn't you get vaccinated? I'm doing my own research. Well, how's that going? Is that going great? Because you seem to be a freaking idiot. None of the 7 county metro areas have a case rates above 33.5. In fact, Minnesota's 2 most populous counties, Hennepin and Ramsey, are 2 of only 6 counties statewide with case rates below 20. Cook County's at 7.5. That's still the gold standard in the state, and they're doing great up in Cook County. Chippewa County, 12.5. Pipestone County, 14.2. Ramsey, 17.3. Hennepin, 19.8. Jackson, 19.9. While being vaccinated reduces but doesn't totally prevent someone from contracting COVID, it does significantly reduce the chances of experiencing severe symptoms that lead to hospitalization or death. Our current hospital experience reveals that 100% of our patients who are COVID positive in our ICUs are unvaccinated, and that the COVID positive patients in our medical surgical unit, 75% are unvaccinated. I want to repeat that. The COVID patients that are in the ICU right now. This is Dr. Kevin Croston, CEO of North Memorial Health. Of all the patients that are in the ICU right now because of COVID, every stinking one of them is unvaccinated. Every stinking one of them. Get vaccinated. I don't want you dead. I don't want you sick. I don't want you bankrupt. And I don't want you having a lifetime of health problems. But what I sure don't want is because of unintelligent fools following conspiracy theories, you getting sick and taking up ICU beds from people that really need them. Because frankly, right now, I'm starting to wonder if we should be offering you guys health care at all. And as a guy who's been strong about saying, I don't want you dead and I don't want you sick, you've gotten me to the point now where I'm like, well, this is the choice you've made. Good luck with all that. 952-946-6205. More news on the Minnesota coronavirus update. Aaron May Quaid going to join us here as well in just a little bit. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Good reminder, make sure you're listening to Native Roots Radio coming up here in the 6 o'clock hour. Robert Pilot, Wendy, Ogama, Lewis, a whole crew going to be on in. Make sure you're checking that out right here on AM 950, 952-946-6205. Back to the Minnesota coronavirus update for today. There was an interesting ruling yesterday. It was interesting for three reasons. Well, three reasons, actually. First of all, the ruling itself. A federal judge won't block a COVID-19 vaccine mandate for scores of Minnesota healthcare workers, at least not for now. Nearly 200 Minnesota healthcare workers, I think the total number is actually 188, filed a lawsuit in September challenging the requirement from President Biden administration that all workers in most health settings get vaccinated or lose their jobs. The workers argued the lack of alternative infringes on their rights. There were a report on Tuesday that U.S. District Judge Nancy Brassel had nearly a three-hour hearing on whether to block the requirement, but ultimately denied the request. Here's the second thing that's kind of odd about this. When she recessed the court to go think about this, it took her 10 minutes. She came out. It's like, no. I'm not going to stand in the way of this. She didn't dismiss the case outright. Here's the third most interesting thing. However, she said the healthcare workers filed the request anonymously. They will have to reveal their names to employers. Because it's I'm going to be fascinated at how many of the 188 people stay on this lawsuit. Because my guess is don't get me wrong, I think one or two of them will probably say, I'm fighting it. Good luck. But I have a feeling a lot of people who enjoy the I want to know. Folks, I want to know. I want to know who the healthcare workers are that have refused to get vaccinated and work in a healthcare environment. Don't I, as the patient, have the right to know when a complete moron is trying to take care of me? Someone who has been around COVID patients, but themselves is not vaccinated? Don't I have that right? I would say I should. And I can't come up with one reason why, if you are a patient, you need to advocate for yourself, why you shouldn't be able to ask and demand, I only want people, you know, people who are caring for me who have been vaccinated. And right now, there's a lot of these people out there who don't get me wrong, I understand where this is coming from. It's Republicans and right-wing circles in there. You can stay anonymous. We'll put them in their place. You can do it anonymously. Well, now you can't. And that's an interesting ruling. It's going to be interesting to see if they appeal that part of the ruling that they want to stay anonymous. Are you still doing your own research? Because I can give you a little hint on research, okay? It's October. People have been getting vaccinated since the beginning of the year. People haven't started dying. People haven't started growing third eyes. People are not magnetized. The blood coloring is not different between a vaccinated person and an unvaccinated person. No, the vaccine seems to be working. And once again, just off of numbers from the last story, 100% of all the patients in that one medical facility's ICU that are suffering from COVID are unvaccinated. Now, that would seem like, evidence. Seems like if you're doing your own research in between times when you're jamming horse dewormer up your backside, that you would say to yourself, wow, 100% of the people in the ICU under COVID conditions are all unvaccinated? Wow. That seems like overwhelming evidence that the vaccines seem to be doing their part. I better get vaccinated. Nope. Not you, brain trust. Boop, beep, boop, 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 beep, boop.
You know, I think that if you eat an entire tub of paste, that will keep you safer from COVID than a vaccine will. Oh, it doesn't? Oh, well, I still stand by the paste regiment. I swear to God, I can't wait to see what you freaking loon balls come up with next as far as your alternative medical stuff. I just see you kind of like, you know, Mad Max Road Warrior and the Fury Road where they took the chrome paint and spray painted over their face. You know, hey, maybe that will work. Shiny and chrome. There you go. The chrome, you see, Brett, it's just science. The chrome, because it's a metal-like substance, it reflects the coronavirus away from the mouth. That's what it is.
From your own research, right?
It's science, man. It's science. Dr. Morton over here is giving me this, the complete checkup. Oh, all praise the Morton Joe. No, come on, man. You've got enough evidence. Go get vaccinated. Or at least let us know who you are, you freaking cowards. Know who you are. And then so I can go in, when I go into a medical facility for treatment, I can say, make sure this person is not paying, you know, doing anything with me. Because if they're in work in medicine and they're too dumb to get vaccinated. And once again, if you've got a health condition, okay. That's not what we're talking about here. If you've got really a religious, you know, issue. And you know, that which means basically you haven't taken every other vaccine that's been out there, but all of a sudden this vaccine, for some reason you're saying Jesus hated COVID vaccines. You're good luck with that argument. You basically, if you don't have a legitimate reason, get vaccinated and stop being a child. I'll do it anonymously and they'll never know. Good luck with all that. We're gonna know now. 952-946-6205. Oh, the ICU out in the Fury Road. That's healthcare we can all believe in, right? 952. Can I get on the drum truck? That'd be great. Can I get on the drum truck?
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
952-946-6205. Erin May Quaid is going to join us when we do return. She's running for Senate District 57. We'll talk about her decision to run for that Senate seat, as well as also what she wants to do as she gets to the Senate. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. One of my favorite politicians, actually, from the last 10 years has been Erin May Quaid, former state representative, former lieutenant governor candidate as well. She has made the announcement today that she is going to run for Senate District 57, which is currently held by a DFLer, Greg Clausen, a DFLer out of Apple Valley, who is serving his third term. It's unclear, though, if he intends to run again. Erin May Quaid is kind enough to join us today to talk about her decision to run for Senate. Erin, thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Thanks so much for having me.
No, it's my absolute pleasure. I'm going to ask you from the get-go here, because you were brilliant here when you were in the House of Representatives. I was a big fan of yours. I thought it was a good, bold move by Erin Murphy when she brought you on her ticket there. It has not been the same without you there. I got to tell you, it's kind of glad to see that you're going back at it and running for office here.
Well, thank you. You know, it's been really fun, though. I've spent the last few years doing advocacy work on the outside and really working in the movement for reproductive health rights and justice, for LGBTQ rights, for, workers' rights and pay equity and all of those things. And so I've always been able to say, I love being in the legislature. I love being outside the legislature. And I'm really excited to have the opportunity to go back.
What prompted this decision for you to say, you know what, I want to go for the Senate seat?
That's a great question. I always said that I would run for office again when I could answer three questions. Why me? Why this? And why now? And I would say, you know, since 2018, I've never been able to answer all three at the same time. And I will tell you that over the last few months, I've just been, you know, I've noticed that a lot of us are stuck in despair, right? We have cascading, compounding crises, systemic racism, climate change, this pandemic, misinformation. And I look around and I see that people feel that, but I feel tremendously hopeful about our future. And I think it is because this really crucial moment has given us the opportunity to actually fix the problems that plague us at their root cause instead of just dealing with their manifestations and their outcomes. And so what I think this moment demands, right, it has demanded more energy, more time, more everything from every single person. That's going to be true of our elected officials. And I think this moment calls for bold visionary leaders who are ready to get in there and do that work to solve the big problems and not tinker on the edges, because I think that's what people are hungry for.
I'm going to bring this up, and I mean, obviously, I'm not trying to create any bad blood feuds or anything like this. Greg Clawson is currently the DFLer there. Now, it's not known if he's planning on running again. He is 74, but he's held the seat for a while. It's the third term. He might decide to run again here. Can you talk a little bit about why the decision, you know, currently a DFL held seat, what is not happening here, do you feel, that needs to be addressed in your district?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a lot of intrigue about, you know, who's challenging whom and who holds a seat. But really, the seat belongs to the people of this community. And we don't know what the legislative lines will look like after redistricting, which happens, you know, after caucuses and before conventions. We don't know what people plan to do. Greg has not announced his plan. But this isn't about Greg, right? It's about our community. And it is about the vision that I have for our bright future and the work and, you know, the vigor that I want to bring to the legislature. And I want to bring that vision to our community and let them say, yeah, or no, right? That's really what this is about, is bringing that bold vision to the voters and letting them have their say.
And once again, I am not trying to create waves here, but so you're saying there's not necessarily anything specific that Clawson has done or has not, you know, championed. It's just more about, you know, this is about your motivations and your goals.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. We thank Greg for his years of service. And it really isn't about him at all. It's about my vision for what we can accomplish together and what, you know, human-made problems can be solved by humans. Mm-hmm. And I really think I'm really excited to do that work together.
What, you know, we should mention Senate District 57 as it stands now, because you did bring up the whole redistricting question, which is gutsy. It's a little gutsy. You're going to claim you're going to run into district when really we're not sure exactly how these districts are going to look when it comes up here. But there's a decent chance there's going to be definitely more Democratic districts once this redistricting is done, just because the population growth has happened in Minneapolis-St. Paul metro. And so it's going to happen there. What in the current district, just going off what's going on in 57, which is the South Metro Apple Valley area, goes out east and goes over towards, I think it's Cedar Avenue on the west side. But what are some of the things that you are looking at that you say, you know what, these need to be addressed in this district?
Absolutely. I think that there are, you know, we have to make deep investments in our human and public infrastructure that includes childcare and elder care and disability services, that includes deep investments in public education, that includes investments in, you know, the people in the community. We know that women are getting pushed out of the workforce because they can't afford to send their kids to daycare. And now they're caring for, you know, kids at home. Some people are working at home while also educating their children at home. I ran for state house in 2016 because of the issue of childhood hunger. That has not decreased. It has increased and it has spread. We know that seniors are hungry. We know that college students are hungry. And I really do want to address not just the issue of hunger, but the system that allows people to, you know, go hungry in the wealthiest nation in the world. And then for me, reproductive rights, health and justice continues to be a top issue. We see that Roe v. Wade is, you know, imminently under attack. It doesn't exist anymore in Texas. The Supreme Court is set to hear something about it in December. I've been leading a 26-member coalition to advance reproductive justice as the advocacy director at Gender Justice, and I look forward to bringing that same vigor into the Senate. And then, you know, climate justice is always top of mind. I was the only freshman Democrat who was on the Energy Committee in the House, and I would look forward to bringing that same expertise into the Senate if elected.
I'm glad
you know, just casual things.
You're just a little here and there. When you mentioned reproductive rights, I mean, once again, if anyone thinks these Republicans are going to just stop at just trying to stop abortion, I mean, it seems like their goal is basically getting rid of birth control, getting rid of any kind of, system that helps out lower income women with women's health care. I mean, it really is a scary future if they have control. We need to actually have people that are advocates for women. God forbid we have actually advocates for women and women's health care issues. So, you know, heaven forbid we actually push forward with that. I want to bring up the food thing, though, because I'm so happy. And this is one of the things you talked about this back when you're in the House, and hunger. It is such an important issue for me, and just I'm wearing it on my sleeve. I'm a Catholic, or was a Catholic. For me, feeding people is one of the base things we can do as human beings to take care of other human beings. We had Tori Westrum, the senator from the western part of the state, early this year, try to basically prevent people with food stamps from being able to go over and getting food at farmers market, the freshest, most available.
Bucks.
Exactly. He tried to kill that off just because he wanted to be mean. I mean, it really is amazing to me that there are just so many people out there that with this need, as you describe, it is everywhere in every community. There are people hungry right now. We still have Republicans who are saying, no, we're not going to give them food.
I know. And I had a representative, you know, I started the Childhood Hunger Caucus when I was in the House, and I would love to bring that back. But I had a representative look me in the face and say, I've never met a hungry kid. And I was like, well, then you've never met a kid. I mean, the hunger is rampant and it's everywhere. And we know hungry kids can't learn. Hungry seniors can't, you know, survive. College students can't learn. I mean, this is a basic human need that we have to not only thrive, but exist, is food. And so we really do have to tackle this issue. And there is a systemic problem when people can't afford to pay the rent or their mortgage and feed their family in the same month.
There's no way in the world I can convince you to tell me which House rep said they have never seen a hungry child. Is there any way I could convince you to tell me who said that?
You twisted my arm. It was Drazkowski.
It was Draz? Oh, yeah. Okay. I will. I think it's going to be time for us to go down and visit his district and see exactly what's going on with his constituents down there.
I know. It's very dire everywhere, but particularly in rural Minnesota, when there aren't as many food shelves and transit options to get there.
Absolutely.
Which I mentioned to him.
Well, and you said exactly, and that there's the other complexity of it. It's the people in rural Minnesota where the hunger is that much more complex issue, because just getting to the food is a difficult thing. Where, you know, you need to have these Meals on Wheels programs. You need to have a vibrant, you know, assistance from the state to help out the food shelves that are there. And they're against it, and it blows my mind.
Or even the grocery stores, right? Yeah. Because grocery stores are dying in smaller towns. You know, it's really sad that there are places where you can't access basic services because technically there aren't enough people there. I mean, I just don't think that the size of your town should determine whether or not you have basic services.
We should also talk a little bit about the makeup of the Senate here. It is woefully white and male. In a state which is getting more and more diverse by the day. Frankly, the Senate does not represent, you know, when you look at the Senate, it does not seem to represent the state. It is a very white male Senate. Talk a little bit about that, because obviously candidates like yourself would change up that dynamic.
Yeah, I mean, in the 163 years that the current iteration of the Minnesota government exists, we haven't had a Black woman in the Senate ever. Mm-hmm. And I don't really think you can have democracy without Black women. You know, we've made all these policy decisions for every Minnesotan for 163 years without the input of Black women in the upper chamber. And in addition to the fact that I look forward to bringing my community's voice to the Senate, bringing that unique perspective, that intersectional framework, I think is really important, too. And I would also be elected the first out lesbian. I shouldn't say the only, you know, the first lesbian. There probably have been before, but the first out one, for sure.
Well, and that's another thing, too. I mean, first of all, Black women, I believe in the state of Minnesota, I think it's the fourth largest, minority group, white men, white women, Black men, Black women. It's impossible to believe that's hard to comprehend. We've not had one Black woman in the Senate, as well as also 10% of the population is LGBTQ. How in the world is this even, it does boggle the mind how this has maintained a, 1950s standard as far as the makeup.
Well, I will say, there is something kind of sad about being able to mount a historic campaign in 2021, but I look at every barrier broken as a way to throw open the door. I would hope that I won't be the only Black woman elected to the Minnesota Senate this year. I think there are a few running. So among the first, but not the only. And I think that, it's hard to be what you can't see. And so I stand on the shoulders of people like Karen Clark and Susan Allen and Alan Spear and Scott Dibble, queer leaders who came before me and certainly showed me that you can be a lesbian or gay and be elected official. And hopefully one day we will have our first transgender member of the legislature. The younger generation below us, 10% right now, but you should know that, high school and college students overwhelmingly are identifying more and more along the gender spectrum and the sexuality spectrum. And so I really think that that will continue to change. And this is just, I'm a canary in the coal mine, right? More to come.
I have a 20-year-old, a 17-year-old, and a 14-year-old. I'm going to just say this about that generation. They are done with our crap. They are done with
our
crap.
Aren't they just?
Oh, they are. They are tired of it. I'm glad, like I said, I'm glad to hear you're running. I want to drive people, if people would like to find out more about your Senate race, your Senate campaign, what's the website that they can go to?
Real easy. It's erinmayquade.com. erinmayquade.com. And I'm on all the social medias with the same handle, Erin May Quade.
And you know, if you never caught her House, you know, career when she was there, she was brilliant there. If she does win the Senate seat, I have zero doubt. As a matter of fact, I think we need the brilliance clearly with the leadership that we've had in the Republicans in the Minnesota Senate. We need Erin May and more people like her. Her voice is in that Senate. Final thing I'm going to ask you, since I've asked everyone that's been on the show today, and this is completely frivolous and has no point. all right, so Gaffigan and Jeff Foxworthy both are going to film their Minnesota shows for a Netflix special. If you had your choice of going to see Gaffigan or Foxworthy, who would you go see?
Jim Gaffigan. Yeah. I will tell you this. I love Jim Gaffigan. I love food-related humor. And my brother had his appendix out. It was years ago. And I sent him one of Gaffigan's specials. And he texted me, he's like, I'm going to kill you. I almost burst a stitch watching the special. So I would definitely go see Jim Gaffigan.
I am with you. His whole thing on bears, too, is ultimately classic. Signed, The Bears. I would agree with you. Everyone else wanted to see Foxworthy. You and I, if we could ever manage to find the tickets, we could go see Gaffigan.
We'll be at Gaffigan's show talking about Hot Pockets.
Erin May Quade, once again, it's www.erinmayquade.com, running for Senate District 57. Erin, thank you very much. I appreciate the time today. Thank you.
Thanks so much for having me.
My pleasure. I want to make this one quick announcement here, and because of this, because obviously we've been talking with some of the candidates here. We're open to all the Minneapolis mayoral candidates. We've started interviewing them. We'll have them on the air. We've talked to two of the Hennepin County attorney candidates. We'll try to have more of them on there. By all means, Senator Greg Clausen, if you decide you want to run for this race, the show, it's equal opportunity, equal time. Well, in the primary, I'd love to have you on the show. You're more than welcome to come in, talk about your three terms and what you're championing down there. By all means, it's not just about one or the other. Erin May Quade is going to be on. If you would like to be on, we can make, obviously, time for Senator Clausen as well. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. Last segment right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Of course, we'll spotlight Stein. We'll spotlight Erin May Quade. You can listen to those on the SoundCloud page over... do we link to those on the iTunes, or is that just the main show on iTunes?
Well, they go on everything. Yep.
They go on everything. You can listen on iTunes. You can listen on TuneIn, live worldwide. We're everywhere. We're everywhere. I don't know what Stein's excited about.
I host three podcasts.
Oh, really? Yeah. What does a cricket sound like by itself? 952-946-6205. God, we cannot let Stein hear me. I just said that. Okay. He would be mad at me. I want to get into there. Star Tribune did a piece here on the former Proctor High School football coach and teacher. Who is now resigned, Derek Parendo, head coach of the team since 2008. Parendo says he was watching his daughter play soccer in another town at the time of an alleged incident so egregious it led to the cancellation of the entire football season and a police investigation that has entered its fourth week with no resolution. We feel thrown out there to be the scapegoat, Parendo says. A 1993 Proctor graduate who played high school football, Parendo says he doesn't know. Now, I should mention, WCCO has reported, the WCCO Channel 4 has reported that what allegedly has happened is two football players held down another player and a third player forcefully sodomized that player other players filmed it and then shared it on social media. It's not clear where this happened, but I'll come back to that in a second here. The 1993 Proctor graduate. Now, and once again, that's the only place that's reporting that is WCCO Channel 4. Every other news outlet has so far not said anything, but there's also a ton of stuff out on social media. You know, I'll go with the news outlet. I'm presuming they've done their due diligence. The 1993 Proctor graduate who played high school football, Parendo, says he doesn't know for certain what happened during the incident allegedly occurred after practice on a September afternoon. Okay, so it happened after a practice on a September afternoon. He's not under police investigation and is waiting the results of the police work where everyone else, he said. He was told about the allegations by the high school principal, and days later he was suspended. On Monday, he resigned from his teaching coaching roles as a paid personal leave for the remainder of the school year. He said he's been treated unfairly by the district administration for years. The case is no different. I was painted to be guilty because when you send home a letter saying you are looking for new leadership, then you're pointing the finger at me to begin with. Okay. All right. So I want to back up here because one of the things that you said in this story was that the incident allegedly occurred after a practice on a September afternoon. Now, I don't care you as the head coach were at your daughter's soccer game, not there. The implication here is this assault happened in the school's gym locker room. If it happened after a practice, I could be wrong. I want to make sure I'm very clear. I'm just going off of what has been said in this story in the Star Tribune. Allegedly occurred after practice on a September afternoon. Well, after practice implies that it happened in the school on school property, which would then mean it's under the guise of the other coaches of the football team. All right? So you might not have been there, but your lieutenants were. Your lesser coaches that you are in charge of were there. And regardless of the phase, you are the head coach. You are responsible for this team. For God's sakes, if this happened in the school itself, if this incident happened in the school itself after a practice so that there were other coaches around, how in the hell are you not responsible for this? You're the head coach, for goodness sakes. Now all of a sudden, it's all my assistant coaches were the bad guys. Or, it's like, how did they let this happen? You all of a sudden don't want any kind of culpability as far as responsibility for what the hell's going on there. And I'm not buying it. And once again, we need to figure out if there's video evidence of this. And there's police responding. I still can't figure out why it's taken 4 weeks. It sounds like, once again, they're desperately trying to, it feels to me at least like the Proctor police are trying to desperately sweep this under the rug somehow. But the reality is, I don't think this is going to go away. And if it did, if this was an incident after a football practice on school property, while other coaches were in charge of the team, well, how in the hell are you not responsible, even if you were there? Because I just doubt that something happened of this nature, if this is how it all portrayed. Oh, the coach is gone? Oh, you know what we're going to do today? Why don't you two grab him and you go get something to sodomize that kid with? I highly doubt that that's what happened. So I'm going to guess this was a culture that was there that you weren't supervising because you're at a kid's soccer game, but you're still responsible for. We'll have to find out when the official facts come out on this case. Native Roots Radio, that's up next. Have a good one. We are back on a Thursday. Until then, see ya.